Think for a minute about the last thing you said, either to someone face-to-face or in an email or on social media. Was it truthful? And was it loving? Here's Emerson Eggerichs.
Truth without love is really clubbing someone. In general interpersonal dynamics, you know, well, I'm just going to give people a piece of my mind. You know, well, first of all, you can ill afford to lose what little you have left up there. But secondly, you know, again, they're not going to hear you. So when I draft an email, is the tone here? You know, the truth is there, but what's the tone?
This is Family Life Today. Our host is Dennis Rainey. I'm Bob Lapine. The Bible tells us we are to speak the truth in love. That applies not only to the things we say, but to the things we type as well. We'll talk more about that today. Stay with us. And welcome to Family Life Today. Thanks for joining us. So has this ever happened to you? Have you ever hit send and then thought, oh, man,
Oh, yeah.
You've done that?
I was in a meeting one time. You know this because you heard me apologize for this. But I was in a meeting on a very delicate subject. And I was taking notes, and they were shorthand. Okay? So I was not writing this for anybody.
Just for yourself.
For myself. Right. But I went ahead and typed in distribution all staff, which was – I was going to clean it up later and – hit the send button, and send it out. I was in that meeting, and I hustled to get out of there, had to leave early because we had another meeting at lunch, and then I got a text. And I looked, and I went, oh, my goodness.
Your shorthand notes.
What did it say? And here's the thing. There was really nothing terribly wrong. It just nothing had a context. It wasn't properly positioned to communicate. And so I've learned the lesson. You don't put the distribution or the person in the send box until you are ready to send it.
I know there have been many times when you have written, thought, typed up things that have sat dormant for a while.
Oh, I've hit the delete button more than once. And by the way, just so our listeners know, I did double back on this one. And apologize to all staff and apologize to the group of people who were offended by my notes.
Your shorthand notes.
By my notes. And honestly, they should have been because it was not properly presented. And our guest on the show today is nodding his head. And I guess I just got to ask you, Dr. Emerson Eggerichs, have you ever sent an email before you intended to send it?
Well, as you were saying, yeah, I mean, I wrote the book out of all the failures, but I think one of the things that's most common with us is there you see inadvertently we hit send, we didn't intend to, we're going to go back and clean it up. But a lot of times saying things that I think are funny, you know, where my mistake has always been is the use of humor, and it comes across as sarcasm and as a put down, and people completely misunderstood, and then I get myself in trouble, and I'm having to go back and seek forgiveness because what I thought was just a silly comment, they took it very personal. But that's just all of these things that we're talking about can put us in a position where we hit send inappropriately because we haven't abided by certain principles that will guard us.
And it's not just in social media, by
Correct.
The way. It can happen
Correct.
With our tongues and lips as well.
Absolutely.
Emerson has written a new book. Many of our listeners know of him by his New York Times bestseller, Love and Respect. This new one is called Before You Hit Send, Preventing Headache and Heartache. And I didn't eat much lunch that day, Emerson, after I'd sent that thing.
Yes, yes.
Emerson has been married to Sarah since 1973. They have three adult children. This is really about how we relate to each other, not just, again, as I said, around social media, but in marriage, with our kids, with friends, with extended family members. Why don't you let our listeners know what those four questions you ask at the beginning of your book, kind of how you built this book around those four?
Well, I was it began when I was a student at Wheaton. Had just come to Christ at age 16, found out that Billy Graham went to Wheaton because I'd come to Christ through the Billy Graham film For Pete's Sake, and decided to apply to Wheaton 2 years into Christ in these classes and at the chapels. And I wanted to be an effective communicator. I'd been in military school for 5 years, you know, I'd had an opportunity to lead cadets and so on and so forth, but always wanted to be effective because I always felt like I was putting my foot in my mouth or, you know, people would look at me, you know, I used to say, you know what I mean, I just can't say it, but they say, well, if you can't say it, you don't know what you mean, you know, that idea. And so I had this desire to be a more effective communicator, and I felt like God was calling me to the ministry, and I felt like I needed to really know how to do this. And in chapel, somebody was giving credit to Socrates as they were presenting in this chapel. Before you speak, Socrates, who was accredited as this, said, you need to ask yourself, is it true? Is it kind? And is it necessary? And Dennis and Bob, as I sat there, something just clicked in me. It's just like, you know what? That's a great guide for me. That's a great checklist for me. It wasn't that I was trying to be untruthful, but there were times that I might not tell the whole truth. I conveniently kept things back because I was insecure and wanted myself to look good and didn't kind of maybe communicate everything. I certainly knew I had the proclivity to be unkind. I mean, I knew mm-hmm. that bully, angry, you know, just, you know, saying what's unnecessary. You know, I kind of feel like Peter, who on the Mount of Transfiguration says, Peter, not knowing what to say, said.
Yeah, I kind of identify with him.
You know, so saying things that you just don't need to say. But then I added a fourth. Is it clear? Because over the years, I thought that I was communicating truthfully, kindly, necessarily, and still people were saying, I'm not tracking with you. So it was important for me as a person to make sure, is this really clear to me? Pastors say, you know, if there's a mist in the pulpit, there's a fog in the pew. And if I'm not clear within myself, it certainly can probably be very confusing to others. So back when I was like 20 years of age, I began to try to figure out, if I'm going to say something, what would be a quick checklist for me to go through, for me personally. I didn't think about ever writing a book on this. It was just I want to keep myself out of trouble, you know. I wanted people to get the right idea rather than the wrong idea.
And those four questions have kind of a cadence, a rhythm to them that remind us of Philippians 4:8, where we're told to think on things that are pure and honorable and true. And really the beginning of all communication begins with, are we thinking the right things before we ever engage our speaking, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, and then to that point on Scripture, I had the privilege of studying the Bible 30 hours a week for nearly 20 years as a senior pastor, teaching pastor. And, you know, we all quote, speak the truth in love. There are two of them right there, the first two, truth and kindness. So speak the truth and love. Everybody, they don't know the reference on that, but they all, well, we already speak the truth and love. We kind of know it. Also, there's a time to speak and a time to refrain. We kind of know that out of Ecclesiastes. And then Paul even prayed himself that he would speak as clearly as he ought to speak. And we see the idea that if a person doesn't understand, you know, you're like a cymbal, a clanging bell, or whatever. So we instinctively kind of know. Now, we've spent money on research, and a professor, an academic, who did a national study for us, came back and said, this is mind-boggling. All four of these are distinct in terms of significance statistically, the rating of these things. In other words, like four legs on a table, that if one of them is not there, you're going to have a problem in your communication.
Right.
It's not like they blend together or they wet over. You can kind of, you know, remove one of them from the equation. You're still going to be okay. And he said, this is mind-boggling. These are very distinct. They all must be in place. And the point is that if they are, then hit send. The other side, someone read the book and said, I thought you were telling us to shut up. You're actually telling us to speak up. Yeah, we need the courage then, and this is where most of us are. We lack the courage when we should say what's true, say it in a kind way, say what's necessary, say it clearly. And if all of those align, we need to communicate it. But the problem, of course, is that if we don't think through ahead of time, we end up putting our foot in our mouth. I used to put both feet in my mouth and wondered why I couldn't walk.
Well, are you looking
you like that image?
Look at my face right here. These look like dimples. They're heel marks. I mean,
yeah,
I've
yourself.
Got that same
yeah.
That yeah. same foot yeah. and mouth disease yeah. Yeah. as you have. We do lack courage when it comes to speaking the truth, but we also lack love.
Correct.
And that is one of the things you talk about in your book that I really like, is that these things need to be held in proper tension with each other, because kindness and love make hearing possible of the truth.
Someone comes to us and speaks what's truth, but we don't think they really care about us. They're not saying in a way that
right.
would give us the impression they really love us or respect us, or they're saying it kindly. Long term, it's just not going to be received. It's just simply not. Truth without love is really clubbing someone. Now, you know, if I'm in a medical room, and you know, the doctor says, you know, unless we do this, you're going to die. Obviously, he doesn't have to say it, you know, in a way that makes me feel good. You know, I want to get on with it, you know. But in general interpersonal dynamics, you know, well, I'm just going to give people a piece of my mind.
Right.
You know, well, first of all, you can ill afford to lose what little you have left up there. But secondly, you know, again, they're not going to hear you if it doesn't feel loving to the person. Now, that doesn't mean that we're unloving because they say it feels unloving. Sometimes you can be truthful and people saying you're being cruel when the truth is you care for them more, mother toward her son, father toward a daughter, whatever. But by and large, the principle holds. And so when I draft an email, is the tone here? You know, the truth is there, but what's the tone? What does that feel like? That's why one of the principles, let it set for a while, or I have Sarah read this. Because, again, we can have good intentions, but if the other person feels that somehow we're saying something that's bullying them, is rude, comes across inappropriate, they're probably not going to receive it. Because I take the position that most of us feel badly about ourselves to begin with. We certainly don't want to feel worse on the heels of reading your email.
Most teenagers feel badly about themselves, too, by the way. And we found as parents that if you want to be able to guide them through the perilous teenage years, if you are about to bring a boundary around them, like they want to stay out later than they're supposed to be staying out, Barbara and I would practice, and this was so difficult. It was so hard not to react and go, what are you thinking about? There's nothing good that can happen after midnight. I mean, let's talk about this. But instead, we'd say, you know, and I'd like to say we did this a few times right, okay, Emerson, but not every time.
Right.
We had four teenagers at one time. Sometimes they just wear you out, you know. but we would try to say to them, I'm hearing you say you'd like to extend the boundary of when you come home. I just want you to know your mom and I are really committed to helping you grow up and know how to handle freedom. And how to be able to handle everything when you're out on your own later on. And I want you to know if there's any way we can let you do this, we will do it. But you need to know if we don't think it's a good idea right now for a 15-year-old or a 14-year-old to stay out past midnight, then I just want you to know we're going to come back and we're going to be united as a couple. And we're going to talk about that and why it's not wise. Now, I wish I could say that we did that every time, Barbara and I, but we didn't. But the times we did, it did take the sting out of the truth, which was, you know, you're just not quite ready to have that amount of freedom right now.
You know, as you're describing that, I'm thinking about a coworker we had here at Family Life for a number of years, and he had a nickname. I remember friends referring to this guy as the Velvet Brick. He was the guy who, when he sat down with you, he would tell you the truth in clear terms, and you walked away feeling challenged and affirmed simultaneously. And I think part of it was you knew this guy was on your side
yeah.
and mm-hmm. was for you and not against you. So even when he said the hard things, he said them wisely, and you walked away going, okay, that was hard to hear, but I know it's coming from somebody who cares about me and who's on my side. That's an important foundation. If we're communicating with people, we have to know what's our relationship with these people to understand how our communication is going to be received.
Well, on that first point, is it true? And this is beautifully said by both of you that, you know, we have to convey to other people that we have the best version of them in our minds, mm-hmm. you know, that we have their best interest, that we have goodwill toward them, and that the idea you guys are both saying here is potent because, again, if I'm speaking the truth simply because you're bothering me, you know, I'm telling you the truth because I need you to knock it off. Yeah, that may be true, but the other side of it is if I say it in such a way, you know, the reason I'm bringing this up, and it's hard for me to say this because I don't want you to reject me, I think I believe in you maybe at times more than you believe in yourself.
Yeah.
And how do I say this in such a way that you don't think that I'm trying to put you down, but as much as helping you understand that I'm for you? We had an idea with my son one time, David, our middle, you know, I said there's three concepts. There's authority, there's responsibility, and freedom. And you're wanting more freedom, and you don't want my authority, but you want me to be responsible for you. It has three pieces of a pie, and as you become freer, that pie piece is going to enlarge, so my authority is going to decrease, and my responsibility is going to decrease for you. But you're a man's man, and if you want me not to have authority over you and you to increase that freedom, you know, the truth is you can be totally free by becoming completely responsible for yourself. If you want 100% responsibility for yourself, and I want that for you, you know, the truth is when you leave the home, Mom and I want that. And when you do, we're going to party. Okay, we are going to party.
We did.
Exactly. So then he used to grin at that. But the point is, I want your freedom. But in the meantime, there's going to be this normal tension. So how do I communicate to you that I'm going to have authority over you? You're not going to have as much freedom. I am going to take a lot of responsibility for you. But there's always going to be a tension here. How do I communicate this to you in a way that you don't feel that I'm trying to say to you that you're not a man or that I'm controlling? But that's that idea of trying to say to a person, I'm for you. Your ultimate goal, which is your point, I want you to be free. Our success as a parent is contingent on your freedom and being successful at that. So we're on the same page there, but it's now an issue of timing.
Of the four areas, is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it clear? Those four questions. Is there one that is more routinely violated than another? I know we're different personalities, different people, and we may have our own blind spot in any of those areas. But in general, in our communication, do we tend to be less true, less kind, less necessary, or less clear in how we communicate, do you think?
Well, that's an excellent question. No one's really asked that of me. As I point out, they're distinct and they're all vital. I think the key is truthfulness. You know, I mean, to what extent are people lying and being untruthful? That sets off the dominoing effect. I mean, what difference does it make if I'm kind and I'm lying to you? I'm lying. So I think it
and
really...
And I'm clear. I'm being real clear about
that. I'm clear about this lie.
I was guilty about that as a kid. I don't remember all my lies, but I remember some of them. I was real clear about my lie.
It was necessary.
It was necessary. But here's what I want you to tell. Tell the story of Teddy Roosevelt, because there is a consequence when somebody is caught.
Right. Well, the story is that he was a cattle rancher, and he had hired this individual, and they were out roaming the territory, and there would be these basically cattle that got away but was unbranded. And so, you know, kind of open game at that point. And this new hire said to Teddy, hey, you know, I will go and, kind of put the stamp of our symbol on them, and we're good to go, and we'll round them up. And Teddy Roosevelt, as the story goes, says, you're fired. And the guy said, what do you mean I'm fired? You're fired. I was just going to go do this for you. He said, if you will steal for me, you will steal from me. Mm. I then use that as an analogy. If we're with people who will lie for us, you know, in a business, if you're hiring people and you're as a businessman and you're getting them to lie for you, you know, that's not the better part of wisdom, because I'm going to tell you they're going to lie to you because you've sent them that message that that's really the way we operate here.
And I think you've made a significant point here. The baseline in all of this is we got to be truthful. We got to be honest with one another. Now the question is, in our honesty, are we kind? Are we clear? Is it necessary? But you have to start with that, because you can get the other three down exactly right. And if the honesty is not there,
that's right.
We got real problems.
And then I go even deeper, because most of us don't get up in the morning thinking of ways we're going to lie. You know, so I unpack 20 reasons why we as believers might hedge a little bit on the truth. And it's not always a wicked reason. For instance, there are peacemakers out there. Mm-hmm. And peacemakers do not like conflict. And so they don't intend to lie. They just don't want the conflict. And so their hearts are in the right place. You want to click your heels and salute them. I am so appreciative of your peacemaking tendencies. I just applaud that. But at the risk here, though, is you're compromising the truth on this. So I unpack 20 reasons why we might hedge on that truthfulness. And in fact, there are 81 different reasons why we would compromise on those four areas.
What did you say?
81.
81? What? There's 20 under each. In other words, I unpack, why would I not be kind? Why would I not be necessary in what I'm saying? Why would I not say what's clear? And as I thought about, I just kept adding in my own life, you know, well, here might be the peacemaker idea, you know, that he's not a bad person. Mm-hmm. And it's not, but this would be a thing that could set it all off. And then short term, you've got peace, but long term, they're going to come back and say, wait a minute, you weren't truthful with me. There's a price to pay then when we compromise these. But most of us compromise them because short term, it works. I mean, why would a person be a bully? Why would they be unkind? Because it works.
Yeah.
And so there is a pragmatic perspective that we bring. I was talking to my son and he was saying, Dad, everybody lies. I mean, everybody's lying today. And people lie when they don't even need to lie. And so there is a challenge for all of us. And why do we do that? Because somehow we fear the truth. We fear that if I'm just truthful, it's going to lead to, you know, some kind of consequence to me. Why don't I say it kindly? Because I think if I'm kind, they're going to take advantage of me. That if I'm nice to the clerk behind the counter, they're not going to listen to me because Joe over here is screaming at him and he's getting his product replaced. So we begin to convince ourselves that compromising these four things are to our benefit. And my point in the book is not long term. Short term, yes, but not long term.
Two stories. One, a father was trying to take a nap on a Saturday afternoon. The phone rang and it was his boss. And the father said to the son who answered the phone, "Tell him I'm asleep." And the son started to answer, and he put his hand over the phone and said, "Dad, you're not asleep." He said, "Oh, here, give me the phone." Well, that's one father. The other father I'll tell you about is mine. My dad, his name was Hook Rainey. And Hook was not something crooked about him, like he had a hook on his hand. It was that he had a wicked curveball. But that was the only thing wicked about my father. I do not remember my father ever telling a lie.
Mm-hmm.
Period. He had business dealings in a community where he lived all of his days for 66 years, not far from the log cabin he and his eight brothers and sisters were born in. And so his reputation was well known in the community. But he was known that all you need to do was reach across the table and shake his hand. His word was better than any contract that was secured by attorneys and by courts of law. He was a straight shooter. And Emerson, I don't think we as parents have any idea how important the model is that we set for our children, how we relate to each other. Do we stretch the truth? Do we lie? Will our kids remember us as someone who was, you know what, when he did lie, he fessed up. He dealt with it. And he asked for forgiveness. I think that's what your book is about. And I just want to commend you for writing it. I think this first area you've talked about here, speaking the truth in love, Ephesians chapter 4, verse 25, laying aside all falsehood, speak the truth in love.
And you know, whether it's husbands and wives communicating with one another, or parents communicating with their children, or even children communicating with their parents, those four questions are a great filter to run your communication through. Is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary? Is it clear? And I'd encourage people to go to familylifetoday.com, click the link we have there for the assessment that Emerson has created so that you can do a little communication checkup, see how you're doing. Have everybody in the family take this assessment. Again, our website is familylifetoday.com. You can also order copies of the book before you hit send when you go to our website. Again, the website, familylifetoday.com. I know there are church youth groups, high schools, Christian high schools, who are taking students through this book, and I think that's a great idea. This is a very real issue for not just high school students, but for all of us. Again, the title of the book, Before You Hit Send, order it online at familylifetoday.com or call to order 1-800-FL-TODAY is the number, 1-800-358-6329. That's 1-800-F as in family, L as in life, and then the word today. You know, in addition to our communication being healthy in our family, we want there to be a real sense of togetherness. And if we're going to do that, we need to be intentional about designing things that build togetherness. Here at Family Life, we've just put together our 2019 Family Life calendar, and it's all about togetherness. And throughout the year, we've included a number of togetherness tips, ideas, strategies, activities you can do that will build togetherness in your family. And of course, as you turn the page each month, there's a new scripture that your family can memorize together. The 2019 Family Life Calendar is our thank you gift to you when you help support this ministry with a donation of any amount. Family Life Today would not exist if it weren't for your support and our ability to provide this daily program on radio, on the web, through our app, and now through the Amazon Alexa devices, where you can just train your device to respond when you say, "Alexa, play Family Life Today." You are making that possible for your fellow listeners every time you make a donation to support this ministry. And again, when you make a donation this month, we'd love to send you our 2019 calendar. You can make the donation online at familylifetoday.com, or you can call to donate. 1-800-FL-TODAY is our number. If you'd like to mail your donation along with your request for the calendar, write to us at Family Life Today, Box 7111, Little Rock, Arkansas. Our zip code is 72223. Tomorrow, we want to talk more about who we are in real life and who we are online and whether there's a disconnect there. Emerson Eggerich will be back with us again. Hope you can be back as well. I want to thank our engineer today, Keith Lynch, along with our entire broadcast production team. On behalf of our host, Dennis Rainey, I'm Bob Lapine. We'll see you back next time for another edition of Family Life Today. Family Life Today is a production of Family Life of Little Rock, Arkansas, a crew ministry. Help for today. Hope for tomorrow.